Yes. Okay, good evening everyone and welcome to this Kingborough Council General Meeting held on Monday the 14th of September at 5:30 PM. My name's Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough and welcome to everyone in the room but also and especially to our community who are joining us through Facebook yet again. We are one of the first, in fact I think we were the first council to come back to meeting in the same room and many still aren't, but we are still without community members in the gallery, which we're disappointed about, but I have to say, looking at the numbers, watching our live stream, more people than ever have been able to actually watch and consume council meetings, and I think that is a great thing. Before we go any further, I'd like to, obviously I've declared the meeting open, but also let everyone know that not only is this live stream, but it's also recorded and it gets uploaded to our council website, and usually on Wednesday or Thursday of the week you'll find the audio recording available on our website. The General Manager has just checked that the audio recording has commenced and confirmed that. And so the next thing I'll do is move on to the acknowledgement of traditional custodians. I'd like to pay our council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Mulneena people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion, dispossession and continue to fight and maintain for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. This evening we have all of our councillors in attendance, myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff we have our General Manager Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager Tony Ferrier, Executive Manager of Engineering Services David Reeve, our Executive Manager Governance and Community Services Daniel Smee, our Communications and Engagement Advisor is Sarah Wilcox, our Customer Service Coordinator is Kelly Nichols and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. Apologies, there are none. The next item is the confirmation of minutes on page one, looking for a councillor to move and second the recommended motion. Moved by Councillor Reed, seconded by Councillor Fox. And the motion is that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 16, held on the 24th of August 2020, be confirmed as the true record. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried unanimously. The next thing to do is tell people what workshops we've had. It's been a couple of weeks since our last meeting and that's given us two workshops. The first was on our bylaw reviews and the second was on Kingborough Waste Services. Next item is declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest to make on any item tonight? There are none. Would any councillor like to transfer an agenda item? There are none. Questions without notice from the public. As I've been saying every week, unfortunately, without members of the public in the gallery, that item becomes a bit difficult. But if, like quite a few people have been doing lately, you'd like to ask a question of council formally, you can do so by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Address it as a question for a council meeting and type out what your question is, submit it, and then you'll find it on the following council agenda. Questions on notice from the public, as examples of that, the first one is from Mr. David Jupe and it's on the cost of track construction for the period of 2010 to 2020. Number two is on the number of complaints received regarding nuisance dogs from Ms. Quinn Liu and an officer's response from Scott Basham. Question three is on customer service charter policy from Ms. Quinn Liu and an officer's response from Gary Arnold. And the fourth one is on the link road between Spring Farm and Kingston View Drive, and that's from Mr. David Bain, with a response there from our Deputy GM, Tony Ferrier. We now move on to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Cordover, and then we'll go to Councillor Bastone. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about the Environmental Fund. The Kingborough Environmental Fund has been receiving financial offsets for the removal of vegetation since 2004, and according to the website, there's now over $800,000 to invest in projects. I was hoping for a quick update on whether those funds have been expended or where they might be expended.
I suspect on Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova, what I can say is that expenditure has actually commenced this financial year in accordance with the implementation plan that was endorsed by Council. But as to the amount of expenditure and the projects spent on, I'll take that part of the question on notice.
Thank you, General Manager. One further question on that. So was this year the first year since 2004 when expenditure was made?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Short answer, Councillor Cordova, is yes.
Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I have two questions. The first is, at what stage does pruning a tree become cutting down of a tree? If a 15 to 20 metre high tree is heavily pruned, so only the trunk is left at about 3 metres, what can Council do about this?
Do you want to take that on notice, or Mr. Ferrier? Yeah, we'll take that on notice, Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. And my second question, which will probably be on notice as well, if an applicant is made for a retrospective permission to clear large areas of native bush, the retention of which was part of the original DA, what can the Council do? Obviously, the applicant cannot be made to put it back, as it will take many years to regrow. What financial penalties are there in this case?
Mr. Verity said we'll take that on notice.
Thank you.
Councillor Grace, and then Councillor Reid. Councillor Grace.
I have three questions. Firstly, with a building application, if a client chooses to employ a qualified building surveyor, or surveyor, whatever you call them, to sign off on their building, once he issues the completion, are they able to occupy or open their business?
Mr. Ferrier or Mr. Arnold?
Through the chair, once they've got a certificate, the building surveyor gives the approval for them to build the structure, and then council issues the permit following that. Once they've built it, then the building surveyor issues them with an occupancy certificate once it's reached a certain stage, and that's when they can occupy the building. So the building surveyor can issue the occupancy certificate where they can occupy the building.
Okay, right. I think I've raised this before and got a different response, but that's, thank you. And then my second question is, when we issue a building permit for wastewater, it stipulates that it has to be, qualified person must lodge the report to say that it's satisfactory for what it's the purpose of the use of it. When in actual fact you get to the building site and the qualified person says, well, this is not quite in the right place where it should be because there's not enough soil there to protect your drains, and then negotiates with council and shift that plant to a different location but still on the same site within the council jurisdictions. Isn't that sufficient once those qualified people make a suggestion that it should be shifted and talk to council about it and council agrees? Well, then that shouldn't be a major problem, should it?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair. That shouldn't be a problem if both council and the qualified person agree. There is a difference between building and plumbing, though. I mean,
yes,
the building approval is the building surveyor, which can be a private consultant. In the case of plumbing, the council is the approval authority. So it is quite different between building and plumbing. So if you're talking about a wastewater disposal, it's a plumbing matter, which is dealt with by our plumbing people. But yes, if they agree with what the qualified person has stated, then yes, everything's fine.
Thank you so much for that. One final one, Mayor Winter. Had a meeting on Wednesday. I raised about the bus shelter at Conyngham Road on Channel Highway, Old Station Road. Metro had decided to paint it a different colour. In inquiring through Metro, Metro maintains that the bus shelter was part of their property when Don Hazel sold Hobart Coaches to them. I'm having difficulty with them, even though they've got no record of that. Now they request that council talk to them before they'll repaint that shelter back to where it was, pink. So could I ask the question, if somebody, Mr Reeves, could talk to, I'll email the name of the guy that I spoke to at Metro, because again on last week there was about 20 people at this meeting, and they pointed their dismay at it being painted a different colour because they just donated $1,000 to cancer. So they're pretty active with the cancer, as Councillor Bastone knows, down south.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr Reeve, you'll follow that up. Is that, if Mr Reeve's indicating, follow that up. Councillor Reed and then Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. The first one is in relation to the question asked by Mr David Bain about the link road between Spring Farm and Kingston View Drive. I just noticed in the Deputy General Manager's response there, there's no mention of what my understanding was, and that was that when we had a workshop about the Hobart City deal, that this road was put forward, the link road was put forward as an option for funding out of that package, but it was the state government who chose not to fund it. Is that correct?
Mr Berrier.
That's essentially correct, Councillor. That's The negotiations with the state government were such that of the $20 million for the Kingston congestion package, a substantial amount of that money was is being used to upgrade public transport networks and park and ride and things like that. So that's the money that the Department of State Growth. When we were looking at the Spring Farm Road link connection, we were anticipating that we would get access to almost all of that $20 million, and that hasn't transpire. That is not the case.
Thank you. My second question is to the Mayor, and in relation to the repeated calls for public consultation about the Huntingfield Master Plan by the State Government. I understand that we now have a date in about a fortnight for the Minister for Housing, Mr Yench, to come and address Council, but I'm unaware that there are any plans as yet for the public meeting that many residents of the area have been calling for. Do you have any information about that?
Yes, I can confirm that the Minister and his department has now locked in two dates. The first is Wednesday the 30th of September. The second is Friday the 2nd of October. Unfortunately, they'll be held, not unfortunately, because it's a great venue, but the Northwest Bay Golf Club will be the venue. Unfortunately, with the works ongoing at the at our own hub, they haven't been able to occur there. We did ask for a public forum. It's not quite what we asked for, but it is a public consultation. The Minister has told us that he will be in attendance at those workshops, which workshops or forums or whatever they want to call them, but there will be an engagement with the public at that location, and I think that that will be warmly welcomed by members of our community who continue to be concerned about this particular project.
And are you aware of the timing of them? Are they both being held during daytime, and what? And do we know what the capacity is? Because obviously that's a much smaller venue than the community hub, and I'd personally like to see as much opportunity for residents who have concerns about the development to be there.
As I understand it, they're bringing groups of people through so that for COVID reasons, so looking to book people in at certain times to come in, have their say and then move along. But the start and finish times we're not sure of at this stage. Given that it is only a couple of weeks away, I would hope that the department and the minister would be looking to advertise those times fairly shortly, because as you point out, they're both on weekdays and people concerned about this project work as well.
I think it would be terrific if we could lobby the state government and the minister's office to include some after hours consultations for those people who work during normal business hours and would be unable to attend otherwise.
A very good point. I'll take it on board and we'll work towards that with them.
Thank you. I've got another question about some of the delegated authorities in the appendix. Is now the appropriate time?
Yes, sure is.
Yep. There's three delegated authorities, DA 67 of 2020, 249 of 2020 and 306 of 2020. They're all in relation to retrospective applications of various types, and I just wanted to know whether the appropriate increased fees had been applied to those applications.
I assume we'll be taking this on notice. Yeah, we'll take it on notice and come back to you.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I also had a question in regards to Huntingfield. I noted in the Kingborough community consultation minutes that it was stated that the meetings were being held, and it is really great. And thank you, Councillor Reet, for asking further questions. I'd just also like to note that I'm quite sure that's the school holiday dates as well that they fall in. So perhaps we just could remind maybe the Minister in that if we do have any conversations. Families are booking and taking advantage of their vouchers, hopefully. A couple of other questions, just in regards to the appendix, in the GM's notes, the Southern Waste meeting. I'm wondering at all, is that appropriate for councillors to see the minutes of those?
Of the Southern Waste, certainly could, if you like. Previously they have come through, though, in the councillors' newsletter. But maybe they haven't. So there has been practice of them coming, being delivered through the councillor's newsletter. If they haven't, I'll follow that up and make sure that we get them through to councillors.
Thank you. Apologies if I've missed those. Another one in the appendix in the Access Committee, and fantastic job, Councillor Reet. Page 89, the reference to the beach matting, Osborne Esplanade Crossing and Beach Access Upgrade. I'm just wondering, is that... meaning wheelchair access onto the beach?
Sure is. Councillor Reed and Councillor Westwood and I went down. It's a project that's being looked after by Mr Paul Donnelly from Council. There's also a collaboration with the Surf Lifesaving Club that's recently procured a wheelchair to assist. And Councillor Westwood and I also had a follow-up meeting with the Surf Lifesaving Club about how Council might be able to help them to facilitate members of the community using that wheelchair once it's up and running. Like all projects this time of year, we're always pushing to get projects delivered earlier. And the project timing, unless Mr Smee has an idea on the project timing on this one, not exactly sure at this time, but hopefully as soon as possible.
Hopefully when the water gets a bit warmer.
Yes.
On Friday I went to Bruny Island and received a lovely Bruny Island brochure. And looking through the brochure, and again, sorry if I missed it, I did double check, but I'm just wondering who organises, or I guess who puts together the Bruny Island brochure, because I noted there was nothing in reference to Kingborough Council on the brochure. I meant to bring it actually to show.
Mr Ferrier.
There's a number of Bruny brochures. There's one I think that private operators produce, but the main brochure, the so-called official brochure, is produced by Bruny Tourism Inc. So it's the Bruny Local Tourism Authority on Bruny Island. They produce it and they've been doing so for many years.
Okay, thank you. So I understand as council we do have money in regards to tourism, so I was just wondering at all if that we put any dollars
through the
towards
chair,
that.
We don't fund that brochure. Council's funding goes into in the past what was called the Southern Trove brochure, but the Bruny Island brochure is produced by the local tourism authority on Bruny Island itself.
Thank you very much. And just one further question, Mayor. Last meeting I asked about Gormley Drive and noted the many potholes there. was great to see on Saturday when I drove on the way to soccer. It was really a fantastic improvement, so thank you very much, council staff, for getting onto that. I'm just wondering at all, how often do we have to fix this road? Do we keep a log of how many times this needs to be graded and any kind of cost associated with that?
Mr. Reeve.
Look, we don't have detailed costs on the particular road there. For our unsealed roads there, they can vary in terms of how many times we need to maintain them there, but quite often we'll be in there doing either potholing or grading probably twice a year, maybe more. Depends on the frequency of use of the particular road itself. Bearing in mind that we are moving towards a more encompassing sort of system with a work order system, which will allow us to capture all our costs for all the works we actually do, and the questions that you've just raised there, we'll be able to put our fingers on fairly quickly.
Okay, there are no other lights on, which means we'll move on to questions on notice from councillors. The first is on the removal of vegetation behind Margaret Oval from Councillor Bastone. Second, also from Councillor Bastone, rubbish and recycling collection. Also on page 5, we have a question from Councillor Cordova on COVID-19 outbreak preparations. Question 4 is from Councillor Grace. It's on the grading of road at Kettering. Question 5 is from Councillor Midgley, curbside waste and recycling bin audit. Councillor Midgley also asked about the Kingborough Community Hub. That's question 6 on page 6. And then page 7 is on Kingston Park from Councillor Westwood, with an officer's response there as well. We now move on to motions of which notice has been given. The first is from me. There you go. So at this point in time, because I'm moving a notice of motion, I'll ask the Deputy Mayor to chair the meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. So we have two notices of motion tonight, the first one being the Kingborough Sports Precinct Governance Model. From yourself, if you'd like to move that.
Yep, I'll move that.
Thank you. Councillor Winter.
Councillors, I moved this because I guess I was inspired by the Future Direction Statement, and it made me think about how little I've thought about the precinct sort of strategically and how little time we've spent talking about the Kingborough Sports Centre and precinct over the past 6 years on council. Not because we don't care about it, but I guess it's seen as a part of council which has been running smoothly for a long period of time. But like any organisation or part of an organisation, I think it's important that we look to the future, and that's what the Future Direction Statement does. The Sports Precinct has over 40 organisations as part of it, but just as importantly, it has a high school and a college that are becoming an even larger part of it. And it's the heart of community sport in the southern region. And as I said, we've now embraced a vision that will take it forward for decades to come. So the motion's all about investigating what the right governance model is to oversee all of that. From that Future Direction Statement, we know that we've got a manager of the precinct and a team that is always looking at the strategy. And we know that through that document, we've got a lot of challenges and a lot of opportunities. The shortcomings of the way it's currently governed, I suppose, is, as I said, I don't think we spend a lot of time thinking about the precinct from at a strategic level, and we probably never will. I don't see it as something that this group's going to be constantly talking about or it's not going to be something that, it hasn't been something that's dominated our conversations in my time here. I'm not sure it will be. And that lack of strategic oversight probably contributes to what I see as a disappointing lack of collaboration between the users. We've all got I suspect all of us have got something to do with at least one of the organisations there, and many of us a lot more than one. And I suspect all of us really have a lot of admiration and appreciation of what they do. The weakness that I've been talking to all of them about is that they don't play well together a lot of the time, and they certainly don't collaborate. Where they do coexist, they don't necessarily collaborate, which is what the future direction statement is all about. How do you share those facilities better? Recently had a club come and talk to me about wanting to build a new facility, and when I asked whether they'd engaged with any other users that were right next door, they said no, they hadn't. Absolutely no engagement with the nearby clubs that would also potentially be able to use such a facility, which is probably consistent with the way it's seen. So all the what I think our current manager has done is start talk about that as a precinct and the way they can collaborate and work together and share assets better, and I think that's going to have really positive impacts for all the users. The other part of the reason why I raise this is because it was inspired by a conversation I had with the organisation that's doing the study into whether or not it's going to be feasible to have a pool up at the site, is talking about innovative governance models that councils across Australia have used so they can run aquatic centres. And oftentimes they've set them up in, still publicly owned, but set them up as separate entities to the council for accounting reasons and for governance reasons. The fact of the matter is that the sports precinct is a product of collaboration between all three levels of government, and Kingborough Council could not have built any of the assets there on its own. They're only there because we've got Australian and state governments that are supporting those investments. But yet the accounting rules and standards mean that we have to fully depreciate assets that we didn't pay for exclusively on our own, and we'll never, highly likely to ever have to rebuild on our own. The current model ceases fully depreciating the assets, and for example, this current financial year we'll spend there'll be $220,000 allocated towards the Kingborough Sports Centre depreciation on its own. So $220,000 is a massive amount that sits on the operating statement for the sports centre, and obviously makes our losses there look much bigger than they are in cash terms. Potential solutions, as I said, looking at other local government areas across Australia, even within Tasmania, and what they're doing to best improve collaboration between the number of organisations using the same area, how they can deal with depreciation, but most importantly, giving the clubs a voice in the future direction and encouraging clubs to work together and see the precinct for what it is, and that's a precinct that should be all about collaboration. The final piece is the Kingston High School, and I know it's been talked about. It's not just a high school anymore either. It's actually a college. It goes to year 11 and 12. I think this is a great opportunity to actually bring the high school along and bring it more into the Kingborough Sports Precinct and make it a big part of the vision and bring it into what we want to see there in the future. So this is just asking for a report, but I think it would be a great time for us to have a look at how we govern and oversee the sports precinct. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Councillor Grace.
Yeah, I mean, I support this, and what I'm mainly concerned about, and some councils, most councils will know, we've sort of lost contact, if I may say, as elected members regarding the sports centre for some time now. Once, when we had the Community Development Committee, which was chaired by Councillor Reet and others, we were kept well informed. We got a monthly report, and I found that quite fruitful. And I think this council needs to look at that avenue again, where we get reports maybe on a month or 2 months or 3 months, I don't know, but we need to be... it's a building sitting up the road that we just drive past, and we don't know what's going on up there anymore. We've lost touch with it as councillors because we're not given any information. And I think, Mayor, you should include that in your thing. Or the other option, Mayor, is, and the more I think about it, and the more complaints we're getting from residents around the municipality, we may be better off to go back to committees. That's my opinion.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I am pleased to second this, and I look forward to getting the information that it receives if it passes tonight. The Kingborough Sports Centre is one of our finest assets, and it's a community treasure. I've grown up inside it, alongside it. I still train in tumbling at the Kingborough Sports Centre, and it brings so much joy to so many people, and it really is one of those things that we should be so proud of in this municipality. And I'm really pleased to see how the whole sports precinct is developing, and I do believe it's staying true to its vision statement of being an exemplary leader in achieving outstanding socioeconomic benefits for the Tasmanian community, a place where quality outcomes are delivered through the immersion and integration of education, health, community wellbeing, sport and recreational activities. It is that, and it is so much more than that, and it's one of the chief joys that I have being privileged enough to sit on the council is being able to interact with the people and the skill base and the incredible work that's being done, not just in the sports precinct but elsewhere in the municipality. But it really is working well, and it really is going places. So what I think is important about this is we want to increase the level of transparency, we want to increase the level of collaboration, and we want to, I guess, to some extent, increase the level of autonomy that the sports precinct has in order to achieve its goals of having best practice and to be able to indulge in innovation and achieve its vision. So I'm going to be interested to see what happens with this report, and I welcome it wholeheartedly. I think it's not without risk, and it's worth pointing out at this juncture that I'll be interested to see how the report deals with the potential for the risk of individual sports to take a disproportionate weight on whatever governance structure emerges as the recommendation for this. But I think it's something that we can achieve, and I think we should be welcoming an improvement in transparency and improvement in governance. But all of that said, I think that the Kingborough Sports Precinct is something that we should all be so proud of, and whatever we can do to facilitate the ongoing improvement and best practice of that model should be welcomed. So I thank the mover for moving this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, Mayor, for bringing this to our attention. I think it's really great timing in regards to the report that we have in regards to the plan for the Kingborough Sports Centre to actually move it along in a collaborative and transparent approach. As we all know, as Councillor Cordova has said, it is like the destination for sports in southern Tasmania. So many of us are spending our weekends there or have attended there as a child, and many people from across Tasmania actually attend there for so many events. In fact, I think on the weekend on Saturday, once again, there was very limited parking. I think it was a basketball match, and you just sort of think, what is happening there? There is so much happening there that we really don't know about, and it's great to bring all these parties to the table to have their say and to provide for a future input. And just to note as well, last week I attended the Grade 6 information night for Kingborough High School, and they did note the great relationship and MOU they have with the Kingborough Sports Centre, and again that potential to continue to grow as they move into Grade 11 and 12 and the development of students, and perhaps even just that making it an attractive high school for our local students to attend with the amazing sports precinct next door. So thank you, Mayor Winter. I look forward to the report.
Thank you, Councillor Fox.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the report, and like many people around the table, I regularly attend the soccer matches where my granddaughter plays, and I noted that every single soccer field is covered with young people, and they, as they progress from kinder right through to adults, the skills that they are learning and the healthy lifestyle that they are learning, but also the community that is being built in our sports centre. It's wonderful to see the interaction between parents and generation after generation, and it's such a foresight on behalf of Council to have established the Sports Centre. I think it was one of the first in Tasmania, if not the first, and one of the best and one of the biggest. And I appreciate the fact that we might be paying $220,000 per year in depreciation, but we don't actually look. We need to look at the actual benefit that our community is getting from that as well. I'm feeling a bit nervous about having an independent board arrangement. I think this council has done a wonderful job over the years of managing the sports centre, although that we have gone through difficult times, but every sports group has gone through difficult times too. And I think the benefit of the sports precinct has been the fact that it's multi-purpose, that everything we've done, we've tried to make it adaptable so that if one sport becomes less popular, another sport can take over. And I think it's wonderful that we have this asset. At the same time, I think it's also important that councillors understand the amount of use that the area is getting, the amount of people that are benefiting from it, and potentials and opportunities that we might be looking at in the future. So I support the motion. And thank you, Mayor Winter, for raising it.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. For my contribution, I see this as an important next step in the implementation of the Future Directions Plan. I agree with Councillor Cordova's sentiments. I think it is a really amazing part of our municipality that we should be really proud of. I love that we now talk about it in terms of a precinct where all the 30-something organisations that make up that precinct can work together and have a voice. And I think that I'm really interested to see what this report says, certainly in regards to what happens in other municipalities and across other local governments in Australia. I think we've got a really good opportunity here to lead by example and promote equity in sport. And I think that it is an important next step in the implementation of the Future Directions Plan, because it's a wonderful plan and I'd hate to see it sitting on the shelf. Councillor Winter, would you like to... Thank you, Councillor Winter. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Or would you like to read it out?
No, that's, you probably just say who moved it and seconded it. And then...
Oh, okay. Sorry, the Kingborough Sports Precinct Governance Model, moved by Councillor Winter, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? The motion is carried.
Thanks, Councillor Westwood. So the next notice of motion is from Councillor Westwood. Do you want to move that, Councillor Westwood?
I would like to, thank you.
Looking for a seconder on this item, Councillor Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess from the outside looking in, this seems rather administrative for a council meeting. Council meets twice a month on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. I'm not sure how long that's been going on for. It certainly has been since I was elected 2 years ago. The thing about having meetings on the second and fourth Mondays of the month is that for some bizarre reason, they always seem to fall on the weekend, on the Monday of a long weekend, which means that instead of meeting on the Monday, councillors and staff attend a council meeting on a Tuesday night. And I guess, selfishly so, I like to go away for the long weekend and I don't particularly like reading 300-page agenda papers. I also have a fairly structured week, and Monday night is my council night. Tuesday night I do other things and my family does other things. And this notice of motion is to ask my colleagues if they might consider moving, instead of the fourth and second Mondays at 5:30, to the third and first Mondays of each month, so that we can avoid clashing with the public holidays. So, for example, next year, if we were to meet on the first and third Mondays of every month, the only public holiday that we would clash with would be Easter, meaning we would need to meet on the Wednesday after the Easter Monday and the Easter Tuesday public holiday for some people. We would still have the same number of meetings depending on whether we met just before Christmas or not. I'm not proposing to make a suggestion about whether we do or don't. I think we probably have to leave that up to the General Manager to determine at the end of next year. Certainly I don't think we should meet on the first Monday of January, which is the 4th of January. I don't think a lot of staff or councillors will necessarily be around then. And so the purpose of this notice of motion is just to try and avoid clashing with public holidays so that councillors and staff can enjoy their long weekends.
Thanks, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Bastine.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to remind Councillor Westwood that, in fact, when our council meeting was to fall on the Wednesday after Easter, you were the one that proposed it shouldn't happen then, because that would mean the staff would have had to prepare and a lot of staff go away for the whole week. So I think the same thing would happen again here, and also I don't think people would meet on the 20th of December. So I think we would actually be... we would end up having to move one of the meetings right through till the second week anyway, at the Easter time, and I think it would mean in the end that we only had 22 ordinary meetings rather than 23. I just put that out there.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just thank you, Councillor Westwood, for taking the time and having a look at this. I might ask her to do my diary after this for my arrangements. So, yes, thank you.
No other lights are on at this point. Councillor Westwood, would you like to sum up?
Happy to help you with your diary. Very busy juggling my own, but yes, very organised. Thank you, Councillor Bastine, for pointing out about the Wednesday after Easter. I do take the point that, you know, we probably don't want to meet on a Wednesday either, but I'll leave that up to the General Manager when he prepares the meeting dates, and if necessary, move that we don't meet on the Wednesday, perhaps later in the year or early next year. Thank you.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Fox. The motion is that Council agreed to hold ordinary meetings of Council on the first and third Monday of each month in 21, with the exception of the first Monday in January 21. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Move on to petitions still being actioned. At the time the agenda was prepared, that no petitions were still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. We have a recommended motion on page 9. Moved by Councillor Fox, looking for a seconder. Councillor Westwood. So the motion is that the petition containing 6 signatures be received and referred to the appropriate department for a report to Council. As I said, it was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. The next item is unisex bathrooms for schools and public facilities. There's a recommended motion on page 10. Would anyone like to move and second that? Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Reet. The motion is that the petition containing 7 signatures be received and referred to the appropriate department for a report to Council. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motions carried unanimously. Next item is properties for potential disposal, and the recommended motion is on page 21. Anyone like to move or second that? Councillor Westwood, seconder. Councillor Reet. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This item calls for a report into a final report to Council about whether 7 properties that are currently in the ownership of Kingborough ratepayers, whether they should be sold or not. The purpose of tonight is to allow some feedback to be requested from the public as to the sale of those 7 properties. They do vary. They vary across the municipality via suburb and size, different zonings, and I support the sale of these properties because I am very keen to see consolidation of assets that have little or no value being sold and put into our public open space reserve so that we can use the sale of those assets to fund upgrades to other things such as playgrounds and other public open space that is more heavily used. I understand that that land does appreciate. Council's role is not to be a landowner. It is to provide services to the community. If we don't need or we have little strategic value in holding on to a piece of land, let's free it up, let's put it up for sale, and potentially help alleviate some of the housing issues we have at the moment. I really support getting a report into this and getting some advice as to what the public thinks about us selling these 7 properties.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I just have quite a few questions. The first question is in regards to understanding the engagement process for this, e.g. will local residents be notified through a letterbox drop, or how will people be aware in regards to the next stage if this is approved by Council tonight?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, the intent is to advertise our intention to sell these properties in the paper. There will be a sign posted on each of the properties indicating that same intent, and we'll also do some media around it, but it's not our intention to letterbox the neighbouring properties.
Thank you. Just a question further around letterboxing the neighbouring properties. Why wouldn't we engage in that process?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, there's no statutory requirement to do so. The neighbouring properties will have the opportunity to view the notice posted on the land, and there will also be broader media communication around it. But it is quite an administrative task to letterbox neighbouring properties, and it's certainly not a requirement under the Act to do so.
Thank you. Could you please explain, if this is passed tonight, then the process of it coming back to Council for another input and say and feedback in regards to what people...
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, so once we have received all of the public comments and submissions in relation to this, we will collate them, assess them and refer back to Council with an officer recommendation as to, based on the merits of the submissions received, whether the land sale should proceed or not, and advice also in relation to the independent market valuation of the land and the proposed method of sale.
Thank you. In the report it states that the land has no strategic value. I'm just wondering if you could please have an explanation in regards to that statement.
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, that's the professional assessment of staff throughout Council. These properties have been viewed by our property officer, recreation officer, urban designer, natural resources management coordinator, and whilst they have made some comments which are included in the report in many instances, none of the values relating to each of those specific areas are considered to be sufficient to preclude the sale of these properties. So that's why that assessment and statement has been made in relation to their strategic value.
Thank you. As we know, everyone who's read the report states that there is much need for our upgrades of our recreational infrastructure and public open space, and it's been identified in the open space strategy and the playground strategy in the recent audit that has come to Council. I understand, as Deputy Mayor Westwood said, the sales of these properties will be going towards those upgrades. Do we have more information regarding what assets will be upgraded and any timeframes in regards to this once the sale of the properties has occurred?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, councillors would recall the recent playground audit that was provided by our urban design officer, and that indicated that of our 45 playgrounds, 36 are considered to be unsatisfactory, with 18 requiring critical upgrades. So I would suggest that our playgrounds would be our focus, and I'd also suggest that the time frame once we'd received the funds would be over the next 12 months.
Thank you. Just wondering if that would mean if we would sell all the properties at once, or it would be incrementally regarding the project management for upgrading of the playgrounds and things like that.
Mrs. May.
Through you, Mayor, I think from a efficiency perspective, it would make sense to sell them all at once. However, I don't want to preempt what the recommendation to council might be in the next report in relation to the method of sale. It may be that some are listed with an agent, some are sold by public auction. We haven't looked at that in detail, and indeed the public submissions may influence our recommendation in that regard.
Thank you. I haven't spoken to many members of the public in regards to this, but a few had raised some concern regarding the Roslyn Avenue, the property adjacent to, or next door, I guess, as part of the Sherbert Oval car park area. I'm just wondering the explanation in regards to why this is listed. I thought this could be perhaps an opportunity in the future, as discussed at some council workshops, in regards to a possible future park and ride. As we know, the area is growing. There are more houses and infill developments happening in the area. And also, when there are local events, that's really the only space that car parking can be, and there's really limited on-street parking in regards to that area. Of course, I'm interested to see what more members of the community would say to this, but I'm just wondering if you had any points in regards to that.
Through you, Mayor, it's zoned residential, so clearly, historically, this has been viewed as a lot that is best developed for residential purposes, and indeed that will limit its development for alternate purposes. There is sufficient car parking at the Oval to meet the needs of the ground. It's never going to host an AFL pre-season match, for example, in which there would need to be additional parking. There's only ever going to be the need to host the two sporting teams that are playing and a handful of spectators. There is an opportunity at the southern end of the ground to develop further car parking if that was needed in the future. There's quite a large area of land there that could be developed for car parking. And in relation to its potential for park and ride, I understand that's something that's been considered in the past, but not considered a location that we would be pursuing any stage in the near future.
Thank you. I'd just like to make a note on that area as well. There's been a lot of recent upgrades of roads in that space, and I note that council staff use it to dump piles of dirt and all sorts of things, so it has been quite a useful area. And in regards to the park and ride point, I think that sometimes we've made mistakes and haven't considered future opportunities. It is a growing area, and I think that we do want to encourage people to catch buses and carpool and things like that. So I just feel that that is a personal opinion on that particular property, but I'm interested to see what other councillors say in regards to that, and perhaps if we do go out to community, then the community also is able to have their say. Also, another point, talking to other councillors in other municipalities, had we ever thought about, because of the current housing crisis, spoken to a local social housing provider to donate some of the land for the use of affordable housing?
Mrs. May.
Through you, Mayor, that's not something that we've considered in relation to this particular report. It's an item that I know has been discussed in the past in relation to the issue of affordable housing, but that's certainly not been a driver or a consideration in relation to this report. It's been very much about trying to generate an alternate source of revenue to address what has been identified as quite a dire need in relation to some of our recreational infrastructure, and given the impact on our budget that COVID has had, this provides us with an opportunity to raise some funds that we otherwise will struggle to achieve through our regular capital program.
Thank you. That's all my questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Smee.
Councillor Grace and then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Grace.
Sorry, you said I was going
sorry.
To next.
I did. Apologies, Councillor Fox. Councillor Fox, then Councillor Grace, then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm disappointed that we're not taking these properties individually. I have got concerns around three of them. But the first one I have concerns about is Gamala Road. I had a phone call from the original owner of the house that was purchased by compulsory acquisition by council on this particular lot. And the reason it was bought by council was because the council wanted to widen the road and improve the site distance on this corner. And having purchased a land and then rehoused a resident and then now looking at repurchasing that or selling that land, it just seems like a very strange thing for council to do. I'm concerned that this might then result in a house being built in such a way that it needs to be purchased again by council. I'd like reassurance that this is a positive move forward and that we're aware of the history of the site and the reasons behind council making that compulsory acquisition in the first place.
Through you, Mayor, we're absolutely aware of the history and the intention is for our civil design team to come up with a design in relation to the required road widening, and this would be selling off the balance of the land. It's zoned industrial, so you're not going to get a house built there in the future, but once we have utilised the land that we need to get the required site distances, there will be some surplus land that we believe could have a potential use within the zoning, but absolutely we're aware of the history. Our civil designers have given us an indication as to the amount of land that would be required, and there is a balance of land that we believe could be sold.
Further to that response, the properties next door are all houses with residents in living in them. If this area zoned industrial were to be built on, right next to residences, wouldn't there be a need for a buffer zone and would there be a conflict?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, I can't speculate as to what might be built on this particular block of land, and I would have to put my faith in the planning scheme and the controls within that scheme to ensure that whatever was built there wasn't going to be in conflict with the neighbouring residents. But certainly the zoning is what it is at present, and that zoning has certain restrictions.
Thank you, Mayor. The other concern I have is in relation to number 41 Hearn Road, Blackmans Bay. This particular property is quite a unique feature. It's a linkage between the Hearn Road and two schools, basically. There's the St Aloysius to the north and Blackmans Bay School to the south. Is a very nice walkway with significant trees on it. The land itself hasn't ever had a sign put on to say that it's public access, so obviously people may not be aware that it is public, and the footway that is in the grass there is right near the edge of a house next door rather than being generously spaced in the middle of the block and providing maybe some seats or some play equipment for children, which there is no other area for play equipment in this particular vicinity in a heavily densely populated area of Blackmans Bay. I'm also aware that I think Councillor Cordova found that in the public open space strategy, this particular block has been listed as being a medium priority for development for play equipment. So for us to be selling public open space that is so hard to come by these days in the Blackmans Bay area, I know that might be valuable, but it is also very valuable to the residents of the future, and we should be looking to the future, the next 10 years at least, of the Blackmans Bay residents and their amenity, and I would be very concerned if we were to consider selling this at this point. I'd like to hear other councillors' opinions on this. And I think also the Ilona block on Main Road, Ilona, has got similar issues of concern that it's zoned public open space. These blocks are taken from subdividers as contribution to the public amenity of a community. They could have given us money, but no, council must have seen a rationale for taking these blocks in the first place, and I feel that selling public open space in a well-populated area where there is a demand for public open space, which has also been shown in Ilona, that these places should be seen as sacred and not a way of council to raise money. It's easier to raise money elsewhere than it is to purchase this type of land in subdivided areas. Thank you.
Councillor Grace and then Councillor Bastow. Councillor Grace.
Yeah, I'm interested in the comments made around table. Well done, because this is just, to me, is ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. So the ratepayers shouldn't be held responsible for the mismanagement of the playgrounds. I mean, we empower council staff to maintain our playgrounds and to let them get to the stage they're at now, and then come up with something like this is appalling. We disregard our ratepayers, and let's put it straight on the table. We do not take into account our ratepayers anymore. It is driven, every decision is driven by staff. And the ratepayers then, when they find out about this, come to the councillors, rightly so. This should have been a wider report. It should have been a much wider report. And I thought at the workshop that all we were doing was getting valuations on these said properties, then that valuation was going to come back to council for council to look at. That never happened. We haven't got a valuation. What we've got now is a report to sell it. Councillor Fox is right. I mean, how ludicrous can we be? Sitting here around the table, we required that block of land at Jamala Road in 1999, the house was shaking with the traffic that was increased when the Fulsang development took place down there. The dust drove them out of the house. I wasn't on the council at the time, but if I was, I would have supported council's decision to purchase that house and demolish it for health reasons for those people living in it. Now we're talking, and it's zoned now, zoned light industrial. Come on, light industrial, for goodness sake. How can you put a block of land in light industrial when everything else is virtually residential around it? I mean, I just can't follow this sort of caper in this sort of reporting. And Ilona, we mentioned Ilona was dealt with before in my time. It was agreed to not to sell. I don't trust this report in the sense, and I'll tell you why, because we as a council sat round this table, and let me bring your memories back to the Bruny Island airstrip. We were told if we kept it, we would need to spend $30,000 on it.
Councillor Gray.
But that's this is
just to remind you that was in closed session. That's all. Continue. But just reminding you that we dealt with that in closed session.
And what do? We sold it and spent the $30,000 on it. This is going to be the same thing with this land. If we pass this tonight, sorry, councillors, do you mind listening? That's why you don't know anything, because you don't listen to what other councillors have to say. I'm saying is that the fact is, this should have gone out wider to the community before we dealt with it. I wasn't even happy about getting the valuation. It was agreed that council would go and get a valuation, not a report. Can other councillors tell me, am I right or wrong? Was you expecting this report in the thing tonight saying we're going to sell it? No. I rest my case, Mayor. I mean, where are we going? You tell me. You're the Mayor. Where are we going with this sort of thing coming to council?
Is this a question you'd like answered? Because I don't want to interrupt you, that's all.
Yeah.
You'd like to answer? Okay. Councillor Gray's had a workshop recently, which you were at. We were taken through these options by members of staff, so we had an hour and a half to ask questions and talk about these properties. During that meeting, obviously, we can't make decisions at workshops. We discuss them. Our staff were getting a general feel on whether councillors were interested in disposing of these properties, and my read on it, and obviously the staff's read on it at the time, was that there was general interest in considering this matter at a council meeting. As part of commencing that process, council staff then undertook to get valuations and then bring a report to council about how the properties could be disposed. The recommendation tonight does not sell these properties. It commences a process of consultation. So if this motion is passed tonight, all that will happen is that the following properties will, as outlined, will be advertised in line with the legislation and council's policy. So what's happening tonight is exactly as it was explained at the workshop, and I'm not following any reasons why you'd be unhappy, considering this is exactly what you were told at the workshop.
Mayor, why I'm not happy is I'm cautious because of the Bruny Island airstrip, and if you want me to bring that report back and put on the table, I shall do so. I was under the same impression when we dealt with the Bruny Island airport. Nothing was going to happen. We weren't going to spend any money. And I'm frightened that this... I'm not frightened now because you've just stated now, and I think, yes, this will definitely come back to council. But in some of the items of land, they don't need to have to come back to council. We were told at the workshop there was only one lot, as far as I'm aware, that needed to come back to council. And that's what we were told.
Do you like Mr. Smead to answer that question? I reckon he's the best qualified. Mr. Smead.
Through you, Mayor, it's always been the intent that these come back to council. This report tonight recommends we go out to a process of advising the public that we wish to test the water in relation to the potential sale of these properties, with the public's view then to come back to council for further decision. There is no requirement under the Act on land that's not classified as public land to go through this process, but as indicated in the report, we believe that if we're going to follow a transparent process, it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Mayor, for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate that, and thank you, Mr. Smee.
Councillor Bastine.
Thank you, Mayor. And through you, I'd like to ask Mr. Smee what the zoning is on the house next door to 31 Gamala Road.
Mr. Smee, do you have a recollection?
Off the top of my head, Mayor, I couldn't answer that question.
So I think that's quite relevant. I know quite a lot of the other houses are built on light industrial land in Gamala Road, and I was just sort of... is there any way that you can now build...
I'm actually looking it up as we speak. I'm
all right, thank you. Is there any way you can now build a house on light industrial land?
Well, Mr. Ferrier, be the best on that.
Through the Chair, no. You can't build a
house on land which is currently zoned light industrial, but we have quite a few houses on light industrial land in our municipality.
Yep. Thank you. My next question is on the Snug Tears Road property, which is zoned rural resource, but is in fact, I believe, too small to be zoned rural resource. Is that right?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, the size of the land does not have any influence on how it's zoned. If it's already zoned rural resource, that's what it's zoned. And we have lots of very small parcels which are zoned rural resource. It's just that they can't subdivide.
Right, thank you. The council should take better care of it. It's an absolute disgrace, that block. And the Roslyn Avenue one, I was wondering if that had at any stage been offered as a lease to the RSL for them to build their headquarters on, as they're looking around Kingborough to build a new headquarters.
Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mayor, there were some discussions with the RSL that included the car park at the Sherbert Oval, but it wasn't that block that was the one that we spoke of.
Right. Can I suggest that perhaps that's one thing we should do before we sell it, is see whether it could be leased to the RSL?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, the RSL club is limited by the zoning of the land. They can't construct a new RSL club on a land which is zoned residential. The use of the club itself is prohibited in that residential zone. That's been a real problem for the existing club. They are quite limited to where they can relocate to, and it's usually on like a local business or central business type zoning. They can't build a new RSL club on the general residential zoning, which is what this land is.
Okay, thank you very much.
Councillor Cordova.
I have some questions, please, Mayor. My first question is, after the advertising, let's assume that this goes through, if it does, after advertising its intent to sell these properties, will these individual properties come back to council for approval one by one by one?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, they'll come back as a block report. There won't be single reports. They'll be similar to this report.
Thank you. They'll come back all together. My next question is, have we investigated whether these seven properties could be mortgaged or used as collateral for future investment? Rather than selling them, use them as collateral.
Sorry, what was the question?
Have we investigated whether we can use these seven properties rather than selling them, whether we can use them as collateral to, say, get a loan rather than selling them? Let me rephrase.
Yeah, no, I'll get the question, not Mr. Smee.
Alternative financing.
Yeah.
Through you, Mayor, no, we have not.
Okay. Vacant land sales are up 1.6% this year, and farmland value, for what it's worth, is up 6% per year, year-on-year average over 20 years. So my question is, roughly how much money has the council made in capital gains so far from the increase in value of these properties, to the best of our knowledge?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, a lot of these properties have been acquired through historical subdivision. So other than 110 Channel Highway and the 31 Gamala Road, they're not properties that we've purchased. So to be able to provide a figure in relation to the capital gain is a question I just can't answer.
Thank you. Is it true, though, that the value, there would have been a present value of those properties at the time they came into council's ownership, and there is a present value of those properties now? Is it not true that there would have been capital gain, there would have been a capital value increase of the value of those properties between the dates that they were acquired into the council portfolio and today? Hasn't the value of the land gone up?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, consistent with real estate prices over the past 30-odd years, yes, real estate's increased and these property values would have increased as well.
Thank you. And I think it's at about 6% per year, but I stand to be corrected on that. How much is it costing council to maintain these properties per year, roughly?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, that that really varies depending on what property we're talking about. For example, Lot 2 Mount Pleasant Road needs to be slashed 3 or 4 times a year. Other properties sit there and require no maintenance. So without referring to our works department, I couldn't put a dollar figure on it, but it varies depending on the nature of the block and their maintenance needs.
Is it fair to say that it's not an exorbitant amount of money?
Mr. Smee.
Oh, you'd need to define exorbitant, but...
More than $120,000?
No, it's not. No. Okay.
With the Environmental Offset Fund, we only spent that money this year, even though it started in 2004. So for 16 years, the money sat in an account. What's to stop that happening this time around? My question is, what enforceable instrument is there in this report that says that we definitely will spend the money within 12 months? It definitely won't be 16 years.
A motion of council will do that for you. Okay. So if in the next iteration of this, if this passes tonight and it comes back to council and there is a motion of council that directs our staff to do X, Y and Z with the money generated, then that is what has to happen.
Okay, that satisfies me. My question is now about how much money is currently available to undertake the quote, much-needed upgrades on other council-owned recreational infrastructure and infrastructure such as that identified in the open space and playgrounds strategy. How big is the pool of money that we currently have?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. If you're referring to the public open space reserve, bearing in mind that we've just committed $250,000 of that towards the Stillwater Park upgrade, last time I looked, the balance of that account was about $900,000. So take $250,000 off that, and that's all we've got left.
Okay. So there are 73... Well, I noted before, some of this is my question, about the playground strategy. There are 45 playgrounds there, and 18 of them require critical upgrades. I just note that on the website and the playground strategy I've been given, there are 54 playgrounds listed, and they're all TBD to be determined in terms of their actual condition. So I don't actually have a list of which 18 playgrounds there are that are unacceptable. But my question is, which of those 18 playgrounds, and I don't know where those playgrounds are, which of those 18 playgrounds do we intend to upgrade using the money from the sale of these 7 properties?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the playground audit is on our website, and that details the 45 that were looked at and reported to council earlier this year. Of those 18, I would need to refer to our urban designer and come up with a list of those that are most critical and the works that we would intend to do. We haven't looked into that detail as yet. I guess once we have an idea of the quantum of funds available, we would come back to council with a recommendation as to what we consider to be the priority projects, and as the Mayor indicated, that if there was a desire to put a time frame around that, then that could be included at that time.
Thank you. Do you anticipate, through you, Mayor, do you anticipate that the sale of these 7 properties will fully cover the cost of working on the 18 playgrounds, or will it be 10% or will it be 200% of the cost? Do we have any ballpark figure as to how much we're going to spend from the sale of...
Councillor Cordova, these are questions that you can ask at the next... when this comes back to council, if it comes back to council, if this passes, because you're asking staff questions they obviously don't have the answers to, and you know they don't have answers to.
I didn't know that they don't have answers
well, to. Well, OK, Mr. Smee, how... Good luck to you, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I guess if you look at the average playground today, you really don't get much change out of a couple of $100,000 in terms of putting in a contemporary playground that has all of the elements that are expected. So, you know, that's my best answer. And if we're talking 18 playgrounds, we're not really going to scratch the surface with the proceeds of the sale of these properties.
Thank you. I've got a couple more questions, and I assure you I'm not trying to be vexatious, Mayor. Through you, Mayor, item 38 of our open space strategy specifically says develop a local play space or park with a formal trail connection to Herne Road at either 22 Opal Drive or 41 Herne Road to meet an identified gap in this area. And obviously 41 Herne Road is one of the ones that is proposed to be sold. Can we infer from this that we therefore plan to do something with 22 Opal Road?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I suggest the consultant that recommended that was unaware of the fact that 41 Herne Road was zoned residential. The recommendation was an either you look at 41 Herne Road or 22 Opal. So given that the residential zoning of the Herne Road property, and given that it is intended to maintain an access through that property to the reserve below, that Opal Drive section would be what we would be looking at. But again, it's a medium priority and there's lots in the high priority, and it wouldn't be one of our immediate priorities to look at.
Item 69 of that same open space strategy is, it says, quote, investigate further uses for the property south of Hotel Bruni. Am I right in assuming that that is referring to the property that we're talking about selling at Main Road, Alana?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, that's correct. And once again, our staff have assessed potential future uses, and we believe that the land at the where the Alana Hall is, it is much better to create a consolidated precinct there than to look to put any sort of recreational infrastructure at this particular block.
Further to that, there are only four high priority items within the open space strategy that relate to Bruni. There are only four of them. Two of them relate to selling land, and the third one is item 69, which talks about investigating future uses of this property that we're now planning on selling. So three out of four of the high priority things on Bruni are about selling off land. That just leaves the last one being a new local play space for the foreshore at Dens Point. Dens Point is a 45-minute drive away. So I think it's a fair question, and maybe somebody can answer it. What are we, in return for losing this last bit of public land that's owned down there, what can the people of Alana expect to get, noting that there's nothing left in the high priorities of the
great, great question, Councillor Cordova, because I can let you know that number 15 on our high priority playgrounds to fix is the Alana Foreshore Playground, and it's actually only a few hundred metres away from the land in question. So I think what Mr. Smee and his team are proposing is that if the land was sold, then the playground that is only a few hundred metres away, being one of the 18 high priority locations, could be upgraded for the people of Alana.
That's wonderful news. And therefore, can we also assume that if and when 110 Channel Highway Taruna is sold, that there will be work done using the revenue from that Taruna sale on Taruna Park play space, which is a high priority there?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I don't want to, again, preempt what our recommendation might be in relation to what are the priorities. I mean, you would expect that there would be a linkage between the area in which we've sold a property and the area in which we're going to invest the funds, but, you know, without going through some sort of rigorous process to look at the priorities, I don't want to sit here now and guarantee that.
So why didn't we find because I'm assuming the answer to a similar question about Taruna is true for Kingston. Like, when we sell the Kingston one, there's no guarantee about which particular place in Kingston will get the money. When we sell the Snug one, there's no guarantee about which places in Snug will get the money. Assuming all that to be true, why did we decide to do it this way, as in putting up a bunch of advertising our intent to sell without simultaneously advertising our intent to upgrade specific playgrounds and play spaces?
Well, Councillor Cordova, as if we would announce to the community that we were going to upgrade play spaces when we haven't got a decision to sell the property that would allow us to do that. You can't sit there and criticise the idea of selling properties and then say, oh, well, you should have advertised your intent to use the revenue to build play spaces. You can't have it both ways. That's the point here.
Okay. Another question then is, if we assume that there is a capital value increase of 6% per year, which may not be true, but if we do assume that, is there not an opportunity cost? Let's say it's $2 million worth of property that we've got. If we, every year that we hang on to it, it's going up by $120,000 per year, and every year that we sell it and don't immediately implement those funds, we're going to get 1.5% in a bank for having that money there. So my question is why...
My point of order is on meeting procedure. I think Councillor Cordova can either ask the questions or answer them. I don't think he can do both in the same preamble.
I have to agree, Councillor Street. I think I've been really generous so far, and I assume you've got a substantive contribution you want to make, and I don't know how long you've taken so far, but the meeting, I reckon you've stretched them right to their limit so far, and interested in having to say, don't want to cut you off, but I think this would be a good time to start a substantive contribution.
That's okay. I will collect my thoughts, and then I'll go in a minute. Thanks. If that's okay with you. Because there's other people who want to speak. And
well,
I realise that I've
at the moment, there's no other lights on, so you can choose. We'll either be closing the debate or you'll be making your substantive.
I will make my substantive starting
Thanks.
Now. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
In my deliberations here, I'm going to be giving significant weight to key priority area 3 and 3.1, as well as 1.5, 3.2 and 3.5 of the strategic plan. I'm happy to talk about the individual merits and disadvantages of each individual property, but I recognise that I don't have enough time to do that, but I can certainly do that offline with whoever wants to. My personal values here are going to come into it because, as part of this decision, of course, I want to see an increase in open space, public open space, and I absolutely support the intent of the transparency, the fact that we're advertising an intent to sell properties before actually selling them to maximise community engagement. I totally support that, and I also totally support the idea that some properties are of low strategic value and therefore they should be traded in for properties of higher strategic value. In this case, we can see that at 3.2 on page 11, of the 7 properties identified, 2 are classified as public land, and in proposing to sell these assets, what is our plan for after they are sold? And that's what I was teasing out before. Clause 2.1 says the revenue raised from these sales will go to undertake much-needed upgrades on council-owned recreational assets. So that's all we know. Clause 9.3 says proceeds from the sales will be used to upgrade recreational infrastructure such as those identified within council's open space strategies. But what specifically are we trading off here? So if I went to trade in my car without having a very clear idea of what I was going to drive away with, I might end up walking home. Before I sell my house, I have to have a very clear idea about what I'm going to do with the money from selling that house. I fully understand the reason why you would want to trade in low-value strategic assets in return for higher ones, but if we note that from that Bruni property, in 2002 we tried to sell it and it caused quite an amount of community upset because there was nobody really understood where that money was going to go and what it was going to be used for. And all I've been asking today is that just like trading in a car, I understand the logic that you want to trade low strategic value in for higher ones, but you have to know to make that trade-off, you have to know what you're going to get in return. And at this stage, we don't know what we're going to get in return. Now, let's take that Bruni one, for example. Forgive my cynicism, but I'm not satisfied with the statement at 6.1 on page 20 that says, Bruni Island Main Road, Alonna, no inspection of this site has been conducted. It appears from imagery that there are no natural values present. Just 10 minutes drive down the road is Inala Nature Tours, where they boast 96 of the 151 bird species in Bruni. 96 of them are on the property. And looking at the satellite image of Inala Nature Tours, you can't see any of those 96 species either. I guess that's why people actually have to visit the site in order to make that determination. Now, I'm not saying that that site does have any natural values. I'm just saying we need to do a little bit more work and have a little bit more of a plan before we advertise our intent to the community to sell these things. Selling assets is a trade-off. We trade these 7 assets in return for something else. And right now I can see half a plan. I can see the cart before the horse. We've got the plan to sell them, but we don't have the plan specifically to do anything with the money. And we don't have an enforceable instrument that says we definitely will spend it within 12 months on these specific playgrounds. So that's why I'm not comfortable with it. The principle I understand and I support, but I'm just not comfortable creating community unease about selling a bunch of properties without having a clear-eyed idea about what we're going to do with that money. At the end of the day, this is only half a plan, in my humble opinion. It's a plan to sell off council-owned assets and public space. It's not an investment strategy. It's not a cost-benefit analysis. It's not future planning. In my opinion, it's short-termist. I think it's knee-jerk and ill-conceived, and I think it's fraught with risk in terms of community perception, and so it doesn't have my support. Thank you.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I think I feel like for some of the contributions that we've had so far tonight that there is a slight misunderstanding of the process that we are attempting to embark on here. And there's a lot of jumping at shadows, so let's be clear about what we're attempting to do tonight. We want to investigate whether the public would support us divesting ourselves of these pieces of land so that we can then get a valuation and then, on the basis of the valuation, determine whether we would like to sell them. We are not making a decision tonight to sell the pieces of land. We can't at this stage go and look at a definitive list of the playgrounds that need upgrading without knowing what quantity of money we would have to spend if we were to sell the land. So we need a valuation. It's not even a chicken and egg. It's a pretty clear process. We've got to start at the point of knowing what these parcels of land are worth, and then we can look at the valuation in total and determine what that would get us in terms of upgrades to public facilities. And let's be very clear on that. We are sitting on parcels of land that are doing nothing for us. They are idle blocks of land that are being mowed at cost to council. For what benefit? People aren't having picnics on 41 Hearn Road, I don't believe. I don't think they're having picnics at Lot 2, Mount Pleasant Road, Kingston. Yet, there are 18 critical upgrades that need to be done on playgrounds and another 36 that are unsatisfactory, where we have health and safety issues, where we have access issues for people of all abilities. And I have to say, the comment by one councillor that this was about gross mismanagement by staff to let those facilities erode is highly offensive. Facilities deteriorate over their lifetime. Yeah, that is a fact, no matter what you put in. But health and safety standards for pieces of playground equipment also change. And we need to bring ours up, in many cases, to contemporary standards to allow children to play safely and for their parents to have the confidence in that. So I don't think we should be casting the net and saying that we are now selling off land because of the mismanagement of council staff. I find that comment offensive and a misinterpretation of what is happening. We've got an opportunity here to do something for the future in our communities, to upgrade much-loved facilities right around the municipality, but we can't do that without securing additional funds. There are limited funds remaining in the public open space account, as we've already heard Mr. Spee indicate tonight. We need to be able to add to those so we can make a substantial start on these list of playgrounds, and I look forward to us getting the report with the evaluation so that we can move forward for the community's enjoyment.
Just a question, and it is a question, Mayor.
Sure.
Simple question. Why would you want to go and spend $7,000 around about to do a valuation when the public are going to come back and tell us on probably one, two, three, four of them they don't want us to sell them?
Councillor Grace, the...
Well, that's what we're going to do.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. And I thank Councillor Reid particularly for her contribution, because I do think I agree with Councillor Street. Yeah, I agree with me wholeheartedly. I do agree with Councillor Reid that it's important to note what we are actually doing here tonight, and that is agreeing to put these seven lots out to community consultation for sale, and obtaining valuations for that purpose as well. With the clear indication that we are going to be using the funds raised from any sale for pursuing our public open space strategy and works that arise out of the playground audit that was conducted by staff. Mayor, I think it would be easy to dismiss this item as selling off the farm, but it isn't. In some cases, I think these are parcels of land that council never had any place owning in the first place. They're remnants of public open space contributions that are incorrectly zoned, and it's important to note that, despite what other speakers have said, none of these parcels of land are zoned for public open space. They were contributions that were in excess of requirements in some cases. They were parcels that were originally thought to be required for infrastructure that are now no longer required. We hold these parcels for no appreciable gain to the community. That is a fact. In fact, they cost us money. They do, however, have value in the hands of others, and it's value that I hope other people are going to be prepared to pay us for, but we will find that out at the second stage of this process once we get those formal valuations back. It couldn't be more important to be looking at a funding strategy for this process, or for the strategy at a time like this when we are simply not able to ask the community and should not ask the community to dip into their pocket further to fund these works. The good news is, though, that as these blocks of land have organically grown over the last 20 years or 30 years, they will do so again, and a future council will get the opportunity to go through this process all over again at another time, when they can go through the blocks of land that have been acquired for various purposes and realise the same thing that we have, which is that many of them are no longer required for the purpose for which they were originally acquired. Mayor, Councillor Cordova talked about putting the cart before the horse in terms of putting these blocks out to public consultation before we had a clear idea of what we wanted to spend the money on. We do have a clear idea of what we want to spend the money on. We simply don't know how much we are going to get at this stage, and that's what we'll find out at the second stage. So what I would say is it's actually putting the cart before the horse to raise community expectations that there are a certain number of things that we are going to be able to do with these funds before we know exactly what we're going to have. That's putting the cart before the horse. That's raising community expectations that we may not be able to meet. I would much prefer to have that conversation at the second stage when we've got the professional valuations that say this is what we can hope to appreciate from these sales, and we can make a strategic assessment about which of those projects we are going to fund. And these are projects which are going to be important to the community. We know they're important to the community because we know that the response when we put the public open space strategy out to consultation was enormous. So there is clearly a public interest in getting these works done, and there, I stress, I reckon there is also going to be a public interest in making sure that these works are done without, at a time like this, needing ratepayers to delve into their pocket further. So I couldn't support the concept more if I tried. I don't agree with any of the arguments that have been put for the protection of particular lots, and I thank staff for the work that they've done in putting the list together. I hope that this motion's passed, and then at the second stage we get the opportunity to have a look at each of these, the public consultation that comes back, and the valuations, and make a strategic assessment about which of these we want to dispose of and for what purpose.
A question.
Mr. Fox with a question.
I have a question. Mayor, in the past when Council took over land that was zoned residential as part of a subdivision, we immediately own that land if it's deemed to be public open space. But the rezoning of that land to public open space isn't urgent because we own the land. And I think that's why there has been delays in the past in the rezoning of that land and why a lot of that land is still zoned residential. And I'm wondering what process council has at the moment that we do zone land that we take over as residential land, that we do zone it to public open space in order to not lose that land due to delays of rezoning. Is there such a process that we currently have?
Mr. Ferrier or SME?
Through the chair, in most cases, I'm thinking of subdivisions like the Spring Farm subdivision and things like that. What we've done there is that the land is actually zoned appropriately from the start. In other words, the areas which are to be retained as public open space as a, under the legislation as their public open space contribution are actually zoned for that purpose. I'm trying to think of it, too many situations lately where we've kept land which is zoned residential. In most cases where it's zoned residential in recent years is we've taken the money rather than the land, and we've used that money to improve recreational facilities else, you know, in the vicinity. But the ones that I can think of in recent years and the practice that we've tried to adopt is where we've actually zoned the land appropriately for public open space, and so we're not inheriting or acquiring land which is zoned residential. I think what characterises all these instances is that they're legacy problems or legacy issues where the subdivisions were done, in some cases on Bruny Island, for example, by another council, many, many years ago. And so we've inherited these situations where the land has not been used for that purpose for many years, but more recently, no, we'd try and zone it appropriately.
So I listened intently to the debate. In terms of Councillor Grace's contribution, the reason that we have a situation where we have 18 of our playgrounds requiring critical works to get them up to scratch is not because of mismanagement. In fact, it's probably due to the fact that Council's been underfunding depreciation for, I think, many years, hasn't been providing the amount of cash into our playgrounds that we need. The reason in that situation is because council decision through budgets pass over a long period of time probably hasn't had the money to invest in playgrounds as they would have liked. So I don't think it's fair to put it down to mismanagement. Also, I don't think it's fair to say that councillors or council doesn't listen to ratepayers, particularly in a motion that expressly decides to go and ask ratepayers what they think. In terms of Jamala Road and that zoning, I think you'll find that the majority of that area is light industrial and that the residential housing in that area is a remnant of previous period of time. Irrespective of any of that, the fact is there's a vacant lot there owned by council that is doing absolutely nothing for anybody, and this goes to Councillor Street's contribution. There's no value to be had in council owning that property at the moment. There's no value. I went and I drove around, Councillor Westwood joined me, we drove around and had a look at some of these properties today, particularly Herne Road and also Mount Pleasant Road in Kingston, because I really wasn't familiar with particularly that Mount Pleasant property. It is an absolutely beautiful property that is being completely and utterly wasted. No one is using it. No one's getting value out of it. Just because council owns it doesn't mean our community is getting any value out of it, and that's the real measurement here. If council is going to own assets, let's make it work for our community. And the assets that I think provide the greatest amount of benefit to our community are playgrounds. The best investment we can get, best value for money, are playgrounds. We have a list through our playground audit of 18 playgrounds which require critical investment. We're in a situation where we are going to be running underlying deficits and we're going to be under pressure from our ratepayers to keep rates low for probably quite a while given the fact we're in COVID-19, yet we have this report. I am extremely happy to see a report like this to come to us because our staff have identified properties which, on the face of it, aren't providing value back to our community. The opportunity cost here is not in what could be done with the properties, it's what we could do with the cash to improve the assets that are actually working for our community at the moment. And I am interested in the feedback that we get. Perhaps I've been to those properties and have missed something that locals will tell me about, and if that's the case, then I look forward to hearing it and listening to what those concerns are. But sites like Atalanta that I'm very familiar with are vacant lots that are not providing any benefit that I can see, and the benefit that can be derived for the Bruni community is quite large. The playground at Alana is a shocker, an absolute shocker. I left the kids there and they were bored in 2 minutes. It's questionable whether it's even safe. I think the audit provides the feedback on whether it's just about safe. And it could be something that's really special. The opportunity will come for councillors in terms of how we spend the money at the next report. When we have a report that says we recommend disposal of these assets, the opportunity will be for councillors at that point in time to say, I'll sell whatever asset is if the money is going to be reinvested back into another asset. And I look forward to doing that. Of course, I've got an open mind like we all do, but I think it'd be unlikely that I would support a motion in the future that said that we would just dispose of these assets and not know where the money's going. I want to know, want to be able to tell our community that we're not just selling the farm, that actually we're going to reinvest back into the assets that are going to work to our community. So I wholeheartedly support this and look forward to the process going through. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. Just before I sum up, I had a question through you, Mayor, for Mr. Smee. You mentioned before that there were four or five departments of council who provided advice on the strategic value. Could you please repeat which ones they were?
Through you, Mayor. So council's property officer, council's recreation officer, our urban designer and our natural resource management coordinator have all had a look at these properties.
Thank you. I think we are getting a bit ahead of ourselves here. We will have the opportunity to debate individual parcels of land if the feedback from the public is that we should sell these. I think advertising our intention to sell so that we can get some feedback from the community is the right thing to do. It's transparent. It's part of a proper process. We're not sitting in closed session deciding whether to sell or not sell a property. We are being very open with the community. We're asking for feedback. I don't know. I personally don't know the appetite of our community about each of these seven lots of land. I have been to have a look at them. My personal opinion is that I agree with the assessment of Council's property officer, Council's recreational officer, our urban designer and our NRM coordinator. I don't see from the properties I've looked at that they do have any reason to give them a high strategic value. I'm happy at this point in time to accept the advice from those four departments, those four officers, that these seven properties have low strategic value. I'm happy to accept that advice on face value, go out to the community, get some feedback, and then have more of an in-depth discussion about whether we do or don't sell them and why we may or may not sell them and what we may or may not do with the unknown amount at this point in time that we might get from them. So I would ask my colleagues to support the advertising of our intention to sell, and then let's sit around and have the debate.
Thanks, Councillor Westwood. The motion moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Reid is that Council advertise its intent to sell the following properties in accordance with the provisions of Section 177 and 178 of the Local Government Act 1993 and the procedures outlined in Council's Sale of Land Policy, and they are A, 110 Channel Highway, Taroona, Lot 2, B, Lot 2, Mount Pleasant Road, Kingston, 31 Jamala Road, Margate, D, Snug Tears Road, Snug, E281 Roslyn Avenue, Blackmans Bay, F41 Herne Road, Blackmans Bay, and G Main Road, Alonna. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
I have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Minchley, Wass and Winter. And those against is Councillors Grace, Fox and Cordova. The motion is carried. Next item is our annual plan. It's 7:20 though, and we do have a little bit to go. Would people like a break? Councillor Fox would like a break. It's 7:20, so do it 5 or 10 minutes. Just a 5 minute break. So for those watching on Facebook, we do have a little bit to go on our agenda this evening, so 5 minutes. So I think we're going to restart the stream, is that right?
No, it will keep running.
It will keep running, so the stream will keep going. We'll be back.